I appreciate it. I dug it up.
Yeah.
But I've been playing phone tag with
I can't remember. Yeah, but they're asking why, and we said we had to do it. They
said, you had to rush it.
Well, the problem is, State Farm didn't ask for architectural fees, so we had to pay. We knew the switch over, write a letter saying, yeah, we are
I knew some of it. I knew some of the background from the, when we
Good. Married to me.
Some commissioners on Zoom tonight.
I guess everyone
that are coming.
Right. Right from the airport. Right.
You get X-ray. So keep let's keep the meeting going for us. Got to get you home. Oh, you got a 3 hours.
Yeah,
3 hours. Right.
We're just getting started. That's usually.
All right, you ready? We'll call the meeting of the River Forest Development Review Board to order. Please call the roll.
Member Crosby. Member Davis. Member Fishman.
Here.
Member McColl. Member Shoemaker.
Here.
Member Yanaki.
Here.
Chairman Martin.
Here. All right, we have a quorum. First matter on the agenda this evening is to approve the minutes of our last meeting that was held on May 19th. These minutes were previously distributed. An opportunity to read them. So will someone who was present at that meeting make a motion to approve these minutes?
I'm
a second.
I
hold, please.
Member Fishman?
Yes.
Member Shoemaker?
But abstain.
Member Yanaki?
Yes, approve.
Chairman Martin?
Yes. All right, so before we commence the hearing on the application from the Park District, we'd like everyone who's going to address us tonight to please stand up and get sworn in.
Those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to know real fact to the village in connection with court, affidavit, oath, certification, or violations are punishable as a petty offense. Solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony relative to the matter before this development review board.
Right, if applicant would approach the podium and please begin your presentation. Make sure you identify yourself so that we have it in the record, please.
Sorry, I have something. First of all, thank you for coming together and hearing us again tonight. This is a very important matter to us, and I think it will serve the community very well. My name is Lynn Libra. I'm the president of the Park Board. Also speaking tonight will be Mike Sletten, who is our executive director, and whom you've heard from before, and Todd Abrams, who's an executive vice president with WT Engineering. Mike will address the project overall, as well as the landscaping, and then Todd is going to talk about the stormwater mitigation plans and the lighting. I think we also have Fred Kolkman on the Zoom call, and he is with Fred Kolkman Tennis and Sports Surfacing, and they're the ones doing that tennis surfacing work. So to just kick it off with a quick introduction, and you will hear all of one page from me, the five tennis courts we have right now are desperately in need of a replacement. And right now it has been surfaced multiple times and we have 12 inches of layer upon layer upon layer. If the courts are pitched incorrectly, which has water problems as well as playing surface problems, and they're also built on dirt instead of a crushed gravel stone kind of basis. So these were built decades ago, basically, and served us well, but they're in need of replacement. So in concert with doing that, we thought now is the time, if we're going to rip all this stuff out, to look at the park as a whole and really just the Keystone East portion of it and see if we can do a better job of land use. And we've been able to do that with this project. We've basically created space, if that's even possible, but created space for more recreational opportunities. The batting cages are now between the ball fields instead of tucked off in the corner, and the aesthetics of the overall site, I think, are important. So that's it from me. Again, thank you for your time tonight, and with that, I'll turn it over to Mike Sletten.
So I'm Mike Sletten, Executive Director of the River Forest Park District. So you have up on the screen there the site. This project consists of a number of elements. We're going to be removing and replacing the five tennis courts, reorienting in a slightly different location. There are currently, between the bank of three and the bank of two on that plan, we have a two-sided tennis hitting wall. Both sides of those walls are going to be relocated on the new tennis court, the southern court that you'll see in a minute. We will be moving, as Lynn said, the four lighted batting cages. So two will be down west of Keystone Center along Central Avenue. The other two will be temporary, and they will be unlit up by the synthetic turf field just east of that, just south of Lake Street. That facility will be in use just during the River Forest youth baseball and softball season. Currently we have basketball hoops on the two southern courts. We're going to create a new basketball hoop area. One of the changes from last time we were here in February, that hoop area will now be fenced and we'll have lights on it for security and safety. And then in addition, you've heard before also about the flagpole. There will be a 30-foot flagpole installed by the synthetic turf scoreboard, and now you'll see that in the next plans coming up. The one additional element here will be we will be dual lining the tennis courts for pickleball. So one pickleball court per tennis court. We have a demand for that right now. Currently, we just did temporary lining on those courts. That demand is immediate for us at this point. One hit the next one. So here is the current site plan. You can see from there, the highlighted yellow is the five tennis courts that we have. You can see the two-sided tennis wall. To the east of the bank of three is the current lit batting cages. The basketball standards you can see on the southern court at both ends of the tennis court. Then you also, we marked out where the platform tennis courts are currently. Under the new plan, you can see the reorientation of the five tennis courts. So it'll be a bank of four and a bank of one. And then to the south of those courts, you see the new 960-square-foot basketball hoop area. It's basically two free-throw areas. One will be lined as, with a three-point line. As Lynn said, that we will not be dividing out the the batting cages. So you can see on the plans along Central Avenue, the two permanent cages, and then the two nets-only cages up north. Because of MWRD stormwater requirements, we now have to deal with stormwater drainage. So we do have a drainage swale along Lake Street between the tennis courts and Lake Street. That's just required as part of the process for us. Rather not have it. So go ahead, you can do the next one. So this slide shows you the yellowed out area is the current configuration and how the new configuration is going to overlay over it. These are the hard surface areas that we marked in black. So you can see there is a definite reduction in permeable surface or non-permeable surface that will be on the site as part of the project. So I just wanted to, batting cages, you can see the slide on the, or the picture on the top is the batting cage is currently over Priory. So the new, the two new batting cages at Keystone will be identical to those. The size, the looks, everything you can see right there. The lower picture would be the temporary, the nets only cages. There will be poles to support the nets, but otherwise the net will be down. The surface underneath will be, and in this picture, it shows synthetic turf. We'll be having a grass. It'll be mowed grass. So the pitching and hitting surface area, there will be a portable mat that will pull in and out for those that time during the season and a little restoration work. So identify some benefits of this proposed project. We calculated a 9.1 decrease in the concrete and asphalt surface area, about almost, well, 3,900 square feet. We've seen a 38% decrease in the chain link fencing in this project. One of the reasons is we are reducing the fence height from 10 feet down to 8 feet. This is the same application we did at Washington Square. We're decreasing the number of light poles from 8 to 5. We currently have, of those 8, 3 of them are 50 foot. The other 5 are 39 foot, and that with a total of 45 fixtures on those. So we're decreasing them down to 5, and there'll only be now 15 fixtures on those poles. So a third of the fixtures what we'll be having. We're able now to increase the distance in our tennis courts between them from 9 to 10 feet, which is an important element for our tennis community. Obviously, the project will improve the drainage on the tennis courts. They'll be redesigned, so surface drainage will be correctly done this time. We will be centrally locating both the batting cages for the fields. We will be able to add additional recreation opportunity on the site. In this case, it would be the pickleball and basketball hoops, but we will also now, between the platform tennis courts and the tennis courts, have additional green space for future opportunity if that's determined. And then improve the park aesthetics. So the landscape plan, there isn't much green space to work with here. Almost all of it's up by Lake Street where the swale is. So in this plan, we have writing. I got to get mine. Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, one other thing. So there was a traffic study conducted by Jewalt Hamilton, and you have that report. So the report did identify the need for two additional parking spaces due to the basketball hoop area, not the pickleball. And they also identified that the current capacity of parking over there can accommodate that need. So there was no additional needs. So back to the landscape plan. We worked with McAdam Landscaping on it. We were able to put four along Lake Street, four additional maple trees. We will border the north end of the tennis courts with eight firs. And then on that, if you go down that plan. That other one's along Central Avenue. We can fit in one additional maple tree there right now. We were not going to plant out that open space between the tennis court and the platform tennis courts right now, because we want to make sure we identify what the future needs are and don't want to take out stuff again unnecessarily. So you can see in there, we have to take out to, for this project 20 varying quality trees. So that number is now 17. We've already lost three of them that had to been removed. Of that, there is 194 diameter inches of plant material we're losing. So we're more than willing to replace all that diameter. We just, you can see, we can't fit it on that site. So the plan would be, we have our landscape plan. Then we would be planting an additional 52 trees. We'll start at Keystone to try to fill in, and then we'll move around a diameter around that. Our board right now is going through a master planning process, so we'll be identifying those as we go along here. I would imagine by next spring, all that planting would be completed. Obviously, we're either going to do it in the fall or next spring, depending on the planting season. So with that, Todd Abrams is going to talk about the stormwater drainage and the electrical on the project.
Good evening. My name is Todd Abrams. I'm Executive Vice President at WT Group, the civil engineer for the project. What we're looking at here is a plan that shows the proposed storm sewers in red and the new drainage swale slash pond area north of the tennis courts. Today, drainage drains, part of the area drains towards Lake Street, part of the area drains towards Central. All of that existing area is unrestricted, meaning it does not flow through any sort of pond or any sort of restricted system. So as part of this project, we're putting in this new detention area, volume control area, which will restrict the release. All of the stormwater runoff from this area will be directed towards that detention pond that'll flow through a 2.3 inch restrictor will drain to the existing storm sewer system in Lake Street. It's quite a significant reduction in discharge rate. Today, the discharge rate's about 3 cubic feet per second. And after the pond's added and the restrictor is installed, it'll be down to 0.26 CFS maximum release rate. So it's really about a tenth of the discharge that it is today. Next slide, please. What we're looking at here is a photometric plan. It's kind of hard to see. I think you could probably see it better in your packets. The little numbers represent foot candles, which is a lighting measurement. Mike mentioned there will be five Musco poles, three fixtures per pole, LED lights. These new LED lights are really quite an improvement to the existing lights that are out there today. It's much more focused light, much less spillage. Mike and I actually conducted a photometric test of the existing courts this past winter and found light readings across the street, across Central at about, let's see, you want to... I believe it was 4.5 foot candles. This plan shows a zero foot candle rate rating at the parking stalls. They're just south of the new basketball courts, the parking stalls on Central. So light spillage will be significantly reduced adjacent to the courts. And as the slide says, lighting is basically down to zero, 25 feet on the edges of the tennis court. Slide, please. This is just a photometric reading for the photometric plan for the basketball hoop area. Same two 30-foot tall poles will be installed for the basketball court lighting Again, LED lights, really focused light, very little spillage compared to, you know, the old metal halide lights. Slide, please. And then we've just got a couple cut sheets to give you an idea what these lights look like. This is just the individual light for the Musco tennis court light. Slide, please. That's what the entire pole and lighting looks like for the tennis court Musco lights, except this pole shows three or four fixtures where we will have three. And that's what the new LED light will look like for the basketball courts. And there's three lights in the permanent batting cage adjacent to Central. That's the look of the lights for the new batting cage. I believe that is it. Any questions? We'll be happy to answer.
Can you give us a little more clarification as to what trees are coming down? I mean, I just walked on the way over here tonight. I just walked
by. Yeah,
there's
a lot of hawthorn in there, which is those multi-stem ones that you see.
Okay.
So, like I said, we were counting with the diameter. We counted every trunk out of those as part
of it. Are there really big balls?
There's along Central Avenue, there's a couple larger ones. I think they're maples, but overall, we have a lot of ash in there.
Okay.
And a lot of hawthorn. And that's why we just lost the three. And you'll see there's still the bumps where they removed them along Central Avenue. And we have a couple others that are going to be coming down probably even before this project.
Thank you.
Starting with batting cages, existing state, I believe you have two that are open to anybody, then two that are, I think, are reserved, right, for baseball and softball?
Correct.
The new ones will... Which ones are going to be publicly available? Is it the temporary or the permanent?
The permanent ones will always be open to the public.
Okay.
The temporary ones then would probably be allocated to Riverport Youth Baseball and Softball.
Got it. The basketball, you guys mentioned there's going to be a fence on the car side, on the street side.
It'll be
right?
Surrounded completely.
Okay.
Right.
Well, how tall is that fence?
It's the same as the tennis court, so it'll be 8 foot.
Okay. Tennis hitting walls, I notice that now they're going to go from one external and one internal north-south facing to now both of them are going to be inside one court and east facing. So you're only going to be able to use them if that court is open, right?
Correct.
And you're only going to be able to use them really not in the morning, more or less, because of the sun. You'll be hitting directly into the sun, east facing now, as opposed to north and south facing, right?
You'll be looking at the sun, but remember, you do have the Canadian National Embankment there that's quite high.
Yeah.
The reason we put them over there was because with the sun, we want to make sure these courts dry out as fast as they can if they get wet.
Yeah.
And that's the ideal location. I mean, it was that or we put them along Lake Street, and we certainly didn't want to put up these two walls as a view off of Lake Street.
Makes sense. In the pre-filing conference with us back in March, I believe you mentioned, please, if I misheard or misremembered back then, just let me know, that some of the trees that are being removed are sick or diseased. Do we have data or anything around which ones are sick or diseased, or which ones we just need to remove because we need to make the...
So we've removed three. Those were ash trees, and we have two other ash trees we know will probably take them down sooner than later. We try to keep everything up as long as we can.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the best quality base of plant material they put in there at the time, and that would be typical. They're always looking for the fastest growing tree to get things up quickly. You put stuff in the past.
Yeah. Other piece you were talking about, the court size, court to the dimension between the court and the fence. And I thought you mentioned that they were currently inefficiently produced because there's too much space between the end of the court and the fence. And I'm kind of seeing the opposite, where I'm reading that it's actually going from 9 feet to 10 feet court to fence.
So the issue before was they were 9 feet.
Yep.
Now, over those southern courts, we did some, you know, it used to be four courts there. So when we removed... We left some space, not knowing in the future if we'd be resurfacing those or how those would work out.
Yep.
The ideal number is 12 feet. This was a compromise we all worked. We worked with the tennis people. It was a couple of years ago when we did the Washington courts. So those were slightly expanded at the time. They were the same situation. So now we'll have more. Right. We wanted more. Right.
Okay.
And so this was to accommodate that.
The lighting over the tennis courts, I think you guys mentioned it's going to go from 39 feet to 50 feet. That additional 11 feet, can you just talk about why it needs to go that high?
Todd can.
Was it three existing 50-foot poles?
Yeah.
There's three existing 50-foot poles out there today. Each of those have Yeah, 50-foot poles each have eight fixtures on them right now.
That's right.
And then the other, the five 39-foot ones have four. One has five fixtures on them. So it's, but as far as needing the light poles to be 50 feet, essentially every basketball or tennis court lighting that Musco does, Musco is the premier sports lighting company in the country, really. That's just how tall the lights are. I've never done one less than 50 feet.
Yep.
And that's just what they are today. It helps spread the light properly. It's just really the best design, honestly. It's for the lighting of the courts.
And the timing restrictions. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. If they're shorter, there's more spill. There's more spillage.
Yeah.
It's just the optimum height.
Very good.
Those lights, though, how does it affect paddle courts? Because there's
there probably will be some additional light for the paddle courts.
Staying there, when the lights are on tennis. I wonder if a lower height might be better.
It would actually be, it would do the opposite. It would make it worse. It would increase spillage if you lower the lights. So there'll be a significant improvement. The spillage, the light spillage that will come off the new courts. I took light readings of the existing tennis courts, and it, the light spills out across Central Avenue and spills out over the existing platform tennis courts. Actually, if you flip back to my photometric plan, you might be able to see light reading at the platform tennis courts right there is 0.1. It is zero outside of the existing platform tennis court. Villages.
I don't think you're probably talking about light spillage as much as you're talking about eyesight looking while
right.
We're playing paddle,
yeah.
Having lights. That's probably the question.
Oh, understood. Well, there'll be a significant reduction in glare, too. As Mike mentioned, there's, 45 fixtures out there today, going down to 15. So, and these lights, they're new LED lights. There's just, the glare is a lot less intense than the existing metal halide.
I don't know if you played a couple of years ago when we had at the platform tennis the old lights. And seeing what the new LED lights. I mean, it's night and day,
yeah.
Once we converted just those courts, LED lights.
Will the timing restrictions of the lights on the tennis courts match the ones on the rest of the park?
So we have an ordinance for the lighting. It's 10 o'clock for the tennis courts. Platform tennis had an amendment. It's 11 o'clock for platform tennis. Okay.
Bicycle racks, are you guys considering adding additional bicycle racks? Is that needed?
I saw John's report today. We have no issue with adding
a couple
sets of racks.
The other piece is just that empty space that's the size of a paddle court that we're just leaving out. Everything else you guys have done is extremely detailed and well thought out. That piece is just kind of excluded from the entire application. It would just make more sense to include something in there as opposed to keeping it completely blank. I just, do you have any comment on keeping an open rectangle in the middle of the nice development?
So the site, again, we're in, you know, talk is platform tennis is one of the options. And it's been engineered to accommodate for that with the stormwater drainage and stuff with MWRD. So we have a lot of options to do things there. The board, again, it's just started a strategic planning process that we expect takes 6 to 8 months. We'll see what pans out on that. You know, we want to get everybody's feedback on that. But obviously, platform tennis was probably the first thought, and probably in option A right now without saying.
In the site development allowances, do we need to talk about that now or later? In John's report, you mentioned that there needs to be a development allowance for batting cages on Lake Central basketball court. And
They submitted us asking for any site.
Yeah, so I was a little confused on that. So that's something that's required to have.
Says that if you have a letter that says you're not asking for any. Project, and maybe we ought to postpone this meeting so you
okay.
Your analysis. We have a district that says not these allowances. There are no allowances. Someplace off? Is it ball? Is it someplace walk in or down when it's not?
It will have native plantings in the bottom. So that's a requirement for the MWRD. It's called volume control. It's to clean the stormwater runoff. So there'll be plantings in the bottom. It won't be a traditional turf grass bottom. You know, the pond, on the east side at its deepest point is 4 feet deep. Majority of the pond maximum depth is 3 feet deep. It's designed for a 24-hour, 100-year storm. So majority of the time, it'll be dry. For instance, the big storms we had was at this week. Maybe you would have a foot of water in there for about an hour or two. So it predominantly, it'll be dry most of the time. There's no plan to put a fence around it at this point. It's, you know, we've designed ponds within parks like this that are deeper that don't have a fence. It's the side slopes of the pond. Well, you know, you could sit on the side slopes of the pond. There'll just be regular turf grass. I wouldn't say it was usable like back in the 80s when they would build a subdivision and there'd be a dry grass detention pond, and often park districts would use that as a soccer field or because it's grass. This will be native planting, so you can certainly go into it, but you're going to be, you know.
there on the east?
Well,
I don't know how else.
There's a drainage swale on the east mm-hmm. side of the tennis courts in between the railroad property and the tennis courts, and that's just to meet MWRD stormwater requirements. Essentially, you have to capture stormwater runoff from your development. So in order to capture the runoff on the east side of the tennis courts, we need to install some storm structures. So there'll be a gradual swale rut ditch on the east side of the tennis courts.
How deep is that?
Less than a foot. Well, maybe a foot maximum.
I have a question about the light pole. You are proposing that it be lit, correct?
Yes.
The flagpole, I guess.
Oh.
I'm sorry, the flagpole. I apologize.
Yeah, the flagpole will be lit from the top down.
Okay, I have a question. Now, don't flags go down at sunset? You're supposed to legally?
The flags can stay up 24 hours as long as they're
okay.
as long as they're lit.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, good. Because I thought they would mm-hmm. normally come down. Okay, thank you.
So you know, we went around, measured the diameter, and we were going to replace that diameter with new trees. So three inch trees would be the size of all of them. Those are including the ones that you saw on the site plan, those 13 trees, 12 trees. So of the rest, we're going to have to start identifying sites within the within our park system, within the village, and start, and we'll be planting it accordingly. So when you did the library project recently, we were kind of following the same format. Right now, they owe us trees. There was no trees identified to be planted there. They were going to be planted somewhere else within another park, within the parks. So we were kind of following that format.
The two lighted batting cages on Central, then, is that one of the locations that one of the older trees is located that you're going to bring down?
There's probably about five trees that will have to come down there.
A couple of them are quite big, aren't they? And
there's a couple of more mature ones there, yes.
There's no other place you can put those two batting cages so that you're not taking down mature trees.
We're really tight on space here. The board had additional discussions on it after that meeting, and it was just the consensus of the board to less light it and less fence around it at this time for safety issues, because the basketballs it's fairly tight to Central Avenue there. But we want to make sure nothing's getting away and going into the parking stalls or even into the street. So since I've been here 15 years, we haven't had any basketball. The only basketball hoops we had were the two at Keystone that are currently up, and we had two at Washington before we did the resurfacing project there. Both of them, the intended use was for programming only. We didn't want that dual use with tennis, open tennis, and open basketball. So the Washington ones came down when that project happened because we just weren't using them over there. So now this gives an opportunity that there will be, obviously, year-round basketball available. So, I mean, our intent is to leave them up, leave it lit till same hours as the tennis courts. Just like the tennis courts would be a push-button system. Only go on and activate for, I don't know what the time is on those. 45 minutes, 60 minutes, something like that. But obviously, if there's issues, we can obviously amend the usage on them.
And I have another question about the drainage swale again. What would you say the depth of that is? 3 feet?
The swale?
The swale. We have children in that park. I just want to be sure that that's not a hazard of some kind for children if you're not putting a fence or anything around it. Is that going to be an issue, or that would be my concern.
And when that pond, if that pond is full, it's during rain. The pond will drain down relatively quickly. I mean, there's risk in not really. I say that, you know, I do quite a bit of park district work for several, and I would say majority of their retention ponds that are always wet and their detention ponds. So. Well, like,
it seems like
right.
I'm just thinking of a park I worked in Bloomingdale. App system. Always water in it.
So we priority along the backside of William Street. It is even a deeper swale and has filled up. You know, there is occasion it does. So, and that certainly, and it's a larger area, square foot area than
that one's not fenced or anything.
Right,
that
that's
right?
Not okay. Fenced. We also have on Keystone on the other side of the street. We have a smaller, and that's a couple feet deep, and that has filled up, and we don't fence.
The grade of the slope of the retention piece there?
It's flat in the bottom, and then it goes up at a slope, which means over 4.
Kids playing in that. I was thinking there's right now, when we came in here, there were tons of families and children at the little baseball diamond right next to it. I just can envision children wandering over there who are watching brothers and sisters play and are bored and go over there and play. That's my only concern. I don't know if anybody else has the same concern.
Just so you
yeah.
Remember, this is the occasion that's going to actually have water in it. You need a pretty significant storm.
Okay.
Even for any water to begin building up, most of it will pass through.
Okay.
You know, like I said, the Todd said the reducer is probably the biggest limiting factor in this. So, you know, it's designed for the 100-year,
24-hour storm.
Yeah,
that
type of situation.
When it's raining for 24 hours, that's when it builds.
Your concern is not when it's wet, it's when it's dry, so the kids fall in there.
Well, either way, I mean, it's an attractive nuisance for children. I mean, even if it's not wet, I mean, kids
right.
love to go
that's,
digging around in little places like that. That's my concern. And
I agree.
I'm just wondering if there was some way to put some kind of a, even a low, attractive, you know, fence, similar to the maybe the fencing that's across lake,
that's,
just
yeah.
around it, so that there's something that kind of keeps children out of there.
Or even, you know, it's your
right,
yeah,
right.
It's least, you know.
Yeah, because those are the same thing. And I actually, when I've been out walking, I've seen children playing in those little, you know, drain ditches. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just there, you know. So.
Has courts open to the public? No, there's no reservations required. Obviously, we have park district programs that take precedent, but all other situations, it's open to anybody.
How are you going to control portage used for?
So if you go over there, it'd be the same system we have right now. We have on the fence a rule sign. So the cords switch over on the top of the hour, 9, 10, 11, 12. And then we have spots where you hang your racket to hold that spot. Up to now, it's been an honor system for, you know, with when we had COVID, we had to do a little more monitoring because everybody was over there because that was the only place to go to. So, but we haven't experienced any issues right now.
I wasn't at the last meeting because I'm new to this group, but I was on vacation at the time. The cost, how is the cost being covered on this then, of all these renovations and all?
The project itself?
Yeah.
$900 to $1 million.
Okay, it's in your budget then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Right. One next for a few minutes. The comment.
In short, the village departments do not have any, this project will not have any village operations. I know our engineering staff has had some conversations with the park district on some of the minor issues with the swale, reviewing that as this the entitlement process. But aside from that, there are no.
Bill, do you want to?
All right, so for the record, John Houseel, I'm the village's planning consultant. Longer than I care to admit. We did a review of the Park District's proposed plan development. I'll go through sort of the, just to have it on the record, I'll go through it pretty quickly. The applicant did a good job of addressing the conditions, the proposal, the existing conditions. So I'll run through sort of the key pieces that we have to get on the record. So the applicant did a good job of explaining the uses. The best way to think about this, my report is, I guess, atypically long for something that seems like a fairly straightforward request, but there's a lot of technical pieces that I needed to hit on. The bottom line is they're rearranging existing park uses, for the most part, where those uses currently exist, with a couple of exceptions, and they're changing the lighting. So, but whenever you change lighting near a residential neighborhood, it's a big deal. On trees in River Forest, it's a big deal. And whenever you bring athletic activity into areas where it currently doesn't exist, it's a big deal. A ball hitting an aluminum bat makes a lot of noise. People playing basketball can be fairly boisterous. Things like that make a difference when houses are fairly close by. So it's worth going through all the different notes. So regarding the subject property is zoned PRI. It's public recreational institutional. A lot of our the parks in town are all zoned this. A lot of institutions are also zoned this, like the tennis club and recreational and institutional facilities in town. To the north of the park and to the south of the park, it's zoned R2, single family residential. And this is important later with regard to setbacks. The residential to the north is on the north side of Lake Street. And so it's just the distance of Lake Street right of way. The residential R2 residential to the south, although technically it abuts the PRI zoning, it is 200 feet away is the closest residential, because you have to go through the central right-of-way, the railroad right-of-way, the Hawthorne right-of-way, and then you get to the single-family home. So even though the two zoning districts abut one another, they're separated by 200 feet. It's kind of an anomaly in the village that that situation exists. But technically, it then requires larger setbacks to the south. To the west of the subject property, you have Keystone Park West, for lack of better terminology. That's also zoned PRI. And then immediately to the east, again, not abutting it, but on the other side of the railroad right-of-way, you have the Village Hall, police station, fire station, and a multifamily building on the corner of Park and Lake. And those uses are all commercially zoned. So there's no residential zoning east of the property on the other side of the railroad, elevated railroad embankment and track. So, again, residential to the north and south, although separated by rights of way. With regard to the relationship to the comprehensive plan, it's very consistent with the comprehensive plan for a number of reasons, and I won't go into all of them. The applicant does in their proposal, and I do in my report. There are goals, there are objectives, there are core values, and then there are just statements in the comprehensive plan which reinforce this as an essential recreational area, designated as parks and open space. The Villages repeats consistently throughout the plan its commitment to maintaining the highest level of recreational facilities and institutional facilities for the residents of River Forest, with the expectation that these institutions reinvest to make sure that the quality of these things be maintained over time. It's very important to the quality of the homes, quality of the neighborhoods, the overall character of the community, and the fact that this is designated for parks and open space. So it's fairly consistent with all of those. And it's a big part of the character of the community in terms of the unique components of Keystone Park in this neighborhood. So there isn't really a part of the comprehensive plan that this application is inconsistent with. With regard to planning, it works out. With regard to the zoning analysis and the site development allowances, just to reiterate, a site development allowance is required whenever what is being proposed does not comply with the underlying standards of the zoning district. So the zoning in this case is PRI, so anytime anything that's being proposed deviates from the PRI standards, the applicant has to request a site development allowance. The applicant didn't do that in its proposal. This wouldn't be the first time that I caught site development allowances that were required that the applicant did not catch. That's not the first time. I think the last time was the tennis club. I caught two or three the tennis club needed. And at the end, what they chose to do, and I can't speak for the park district, because they said they were willing to amend their application to be consistent with the wording in my memo. So I'll go through what these site development allowance waivers are and based on my review, what relief they need and why. And it all has to do with setbacks. And these aren't buildings being built, but they are structures. They need building permits, they have electrical, some of them, they have structures that extend coming up out of the ground. They're not flush to the ground. The air does not remain open from ground to sky because of structures being built. So not a building, but they need setback has to be maintained regardless. If you remember, one of the things to trigger your memory, the tennis club needed one for the surrounding the garbage area. It was a high fence around an area too close. So it wasn't a building, but it still needed an allowance. So the setbacks in question are off of the property line. So Lake Street to the north, and we'll do the next one, Central to the south. So these two, like I said before, these technically face R2 residential. This subject property is facing those residential districts to the north and south. Now, granted, the one to the south is separated by 200 feet of rights of way and stuff, but it's the adjacent district. So wherever you have PRI has to maintain a 25-foot or 35-foot setback unless it faces an R1 or R2 district. Technically, this faces the R2 district to the north and to the south. So along Lake Street and along Central, they have to maintain a 50-foot setback because in those two streets, they face R2, north and south. So anything constructed within a 50-foot setback of Lake Street and anything constructed within a 50-foot setback of Central requires a site development allowance. So on the north, on Lake Street, they require a setback because they're building those. They're putting in, I don't know, 8 poles about this big around, 8 feet tall to support the netting, right, for the temporary batting cage. But those poles or structures are going to need permits. They're going to need cement footings or whatever, or holes with concrete to have these metal poles put into place. 6 of them, okay. But those structures, the northernmost ones fall within 50 feet of Lake Street. So they need a site development allowance to build those things to support the nets. So again, not a building, but my read is they need a setback for that. So what they'll need is those are setback currently right now 24.62 feet. And I worked with Todd on some stuff. There were some things that were missing in the application that you probably didn't have the benefit of, and I couldn't see. So Todd was very helpful with me over the last couple of days to get me some materials. One of those was a dimensioned site plan. One of the things the applicants typically provide is a clear site plan with measurements to everything. You can see what these setbacks are. In the packet, there wasn't one. So I contacted Todd. Matt gave me Todd's contact information. I contacted Todd, and he gave me the information that I needed to do my analysis. So the poles for the temporary batting cages are 24.62 feet from Lake Street. They're required to be 50 feet from Lake Street. So in order to have the support structure of those poles up near Lake Street for the temporary batting cages, they need a site development allowance of 25 feet, 0.38, so 25.38 feet, what they need to build those poles where they are. And again, fairly innocuous, they're just poles, 25 feet set back, but they're supposed to technically be 50. If we look at Central Avenue, the permanent batting cages, as you can see, the two lighted batting cages down there on Central are very close to Central. They're basically on Central. Now, they already have some stuff close to Central. They have the tennis court fencing that's already close to Central, and they have that they have the building there, that brick building there with the meeting room and the concessions and the restrooms. That's basically right on Central. But one of the things in the plan development is anytime you build a new structure, you have to get allowances for that new one if it falls in. They can't say, well, this building is right on Central, so this isn't any closer, so we're good. They need whatever approval they need for the new proposal. So, again, because it faces R2, technically on the other side of the rights-of-way, it's required to have a 50-foot setback off of Central. It only has about an 8-foot setback off of Central, so it needs a 42-foot allowance off of Central to put the batting cages there. Technically, it couldn't be there. But again, you can see through it. It's not a structure. They already have a structure even closer to Central, but technically they have to get a 42-foot site development allowance there because it's only set back 8 feet. So that's the second site development allowance technically that they need to support that. The other site development allowance they need is for the tennis court fencing and the basketball court fencing as it faces east. And the reason they need that is because they're removing all that fencing. They're removing the tennis courts. They're rebuilding it. They're moving it a little bit, not much, but that has to be a 25-foot setback on the side that runs along the railroad tracks. Because it does not face residential. It faces commercial on the other side over where the village hall is, where we are. So it's not residential. So that all, and it's not a front yard. A front yard, like on Keystone Avenue, is a 35-foot setback, but they're not doing anything over there. 50 off of Central, 50 off the lake, 35 off of Keystone, 25-foot setback on the east property line. So they don't maintain that. So for the batting cages located on that area, they need to have a 20.49 foot setback on that eastern property line so they can put in the tennis courts, reconstruct that big, huge fence, the 8-foot tall fence, and get that there. And I don't consider this just a perimeter fence because it could have been a site development allowance for a height waiver. But this is a structure. It turns a corner. It has a gate. It's got stuff attached to it. It's not just a fence along a property line. It's an enclosure. You can see through it, but it's an enclosure for the basketball area. So I thought it was better to treat it that way as opposed to an SDA for fence site. So they need a site development allowance for that. So those are the site development allowances that they need. The next one is for newer relocated uses. And this is not site development allowances. This is just to go through what they did. So if you look on the screen here, I'll leave it up there where the yellow is. The tennis courts, the pickleball courts, restriping, and the basketball courts, lighted basketball courts, those uses are essentially where those uses exist now, slightly rearranged, right? But those are built-up areas. They're hard surfaces, impervious surfaces. So they've reorganized in the yellow and the basketball courts, basically uses that are there now. There's a few things that are uses in areas where they don't currently exist. One is the drainage swale, and that does not invite activity closer to residential. It's an area that's not going to be used for a lot of activity, so not a big issue. But the batting cages on near Lake Street and the batting cages on Central Avenue bring programmed or facilitated activity through structures into areas of the park that currently don't have it. Both batting cage locations currently are just open space. We may have kids running around or walking around, but they're not, again, the lighted, the southern one is lighted, the north one is not. But these are not designated square footage areas with a facility there that has activated, athletic facility stuff. Right now, those are just open space. So there's new activity going into those two locations of the park where currently there is no programmed activity, so to speak, those two locations. And that's important to note. You can deliberate how you want, but they're activating those areas of the park for uses that currently aren't activated for uses. And those are both areas that are being activated for uses that are much closer to residential than they are right now as open space. That's an issue, again, because you're hitting, you're batting, there's noise, there's just, it's activity and noise closer to residential. So just, we need to be, and I'm not saying they're inappropriate locations. I'm just saying, I want to go through the diligence of stating these are the impacts of using, of having these two uses there. So then the other one, again, is the drainage swale. And the basketball court is a new location, and it's the first time they've had a designated basketball court area here. But that is the relocation of the uses here. Only the batting cages and the drainage swale are uses outside of currently programmed areas. And the two batting cage locations are the only ones that are having structures built to facilitate programmed activity or accommodated specific activity in areas of the park that right now they don't. The next thing is lighting. The applicant did a very good job about going through the lighting. And I thought the discussion that was had, Marianne, by some of the questions you raised about playing platform tennis and sort of like the whatever. And there's a lot of discussion about illumination or foot candles or whatever. That's not the issue. Cut-off lighting, spillover lighting is not the issue. There's, when you're talking about lighting, you're talking primarily two different things, all right? There's illumination, foot candles, and then there's line of sight glare, okay? I could be standing next to somebody with a super beam halogen flashlight and they can point it at the ground and I'm standing next to them and nothing is illuminated. I couldn't read anything. They shine that thing in my eyes. I'm squinting. I look at the sun, I squint. Okay. But if I look down, it illuminates this paper, no big deal. So I can be standing adjacent to these lights and the cutoff can be right here. So 3 foot candles there, 0 foot candles here. Right? So technically no illumination, no spillover. But if I look up and I'm looking at a halogen bulb shining down right at me, that's pretty bright. So when you talk lighting, you're talking two things. You're talking illumination and you're talking line of sight or glare, or that sort of squinting factor where you see the light source. That doesn't bug you, but if I stand here and look up into that, it hurts, okay? So that was my question about the lighting. So I asked about the applicant in my report to explain the difference between the metal halide and the LED, and to explain if it could be less than 50 feet versus the 50 feet, because the higher up something is as a light source, it's easier to look up and see it. If it's lower, I see a light source here, I'm not seeing the light source. You raise up a couple of feet, I'm looking, I can see it. So the glare issue for the residential surrounding it, and I would say even for platform tennis, can be an issue. And LED lighting may be different than metal halide, but if you're looking at an LED light at full bore, it's pretty bright. So I wanted the applicant to explain the difference between metal halide and LED and to address why it had to be 50 feet versus the 39 or something else if lights are so much better now. And with the setbacks they have from the courts and the surrounding residential, cutoff could be accommodated with less than 50, even if 50 is the industry standard. Because at 50, you can see underneath it much better than you can at 11 feet less. So what I said was I wanted them to explain the difference and why it had to be 11 and the difference between metal halide and LED. The cutoff control and lineup and spillover is handled excellently. Patricus has always done a good job. Musco is the national rainmaker or galactic empire when it comes to sports field lighting nationally. That's who does 90% of it. And the spillover lighting is not the issue. What they're proposing will provide cutoff, so there will not be illumination onto adjacent properties. The issue of glare is a different story, and a lot of the trees being removed is also a hindrance. Right now, a tree canopy will filter a lot of line-of-sight glare. Some of the trees being removed, historically, the parks that have been area that's been decimated by tree removal has been along Central Avenue. Before you used to be able to be over in the southern neighborhood, look into the park and be pretty heavily canopy, but that's been, over the years, pretty much wiped out. This last little stand where the batting cage is like the last little stand of big trees on Central. So the question about could it be someplace else, and I know they're limited on park space and whatever, but trees matter, and they're removing some pretty big ones and some pretty big areas. And a lot of the trees that do exist that are not being removed are less than 50 feet. So if the lights now are going above the tree canopy, there's not going to be anything filtering out the direct line of sight to the light source. So all things to consider that the applicant has to address, because I can't say if it's right or wrong. The fact that they are now going to 5 poles not eight, that's a plus. The fact that LED provides more control than metal halide, that's a plus. The fact that they're having 15 fixtures, not 45, that's a plus. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of things that are bonus. The issue that is still, I think, would probably be of most concern is line of sight. So what I would recommend and what I recommended here is, if this gets approved as proposed, they do what they did when the lights were proposed for Keystone Park initially. I don't know if you remember that or not, but it was a big deal. I mean, because before that, it was dark, all right? And now it's we've gotten used to the lights, and it's fine. Well, most people think, I think it's okay. They've gotten used to it. But one of the things the park district did is when the lights went up and went on, is they worked with the neighbors and the village and whatever to make sure they were tuned just right. Did they have to do a little more shielding to provide light? They dialed them in, so to speak, or they calibrated them once they went up and on, and working with the neighbors and working with the village. So I would suggest if it gets approved, even though cutoff lighting is good and spillover is not an issue, is there additional shielding? Is there additional tweaking a little bit to eliminate the glare for surrounding neighborhoods, as well as maybe people playing in the adjacent pedibles? Something they would have to do once it gets up. So that's lighting. And again, the only reason I spend so much time for lighting, even though they are reducing the number of poles and the number of fixtures, LED is bright and there's a immediately adjacent residential. So I've got to go through this diligently. The next thing is dark sky. This takes care of that. Dark sky is an important thing for people. To the extent possible, you want to prevent spillover light from going up. And this does that because it's all downward projected lighting. So that's not an issue, but I wanted to hit on that. And the other thing I already mentioned, because it was asked, was the hours of operation. There was a lot of discussion when lights first went in. I just wanted to make sure that the applicant went on the record as stating the hours of operation would not change. The other thing the applicant didn't touch on, and I think they should have, because it's to their advantage or to their good, is right now, if you want to go play tennis and you activate the lights, everything lights up, correct? I mean, like, I'm going down there hitting the batting of the practice wall, and I'm lighting up the east end of Keystone Park. The new one will have three separate switches. So if I want to play on a court, I activate that court. I'm not lighting up the whole park. So I'm just lighting up the court or a couple of courts that I'm using. And that's a big difference because sometimes you go out there at night. I walk around a lot. You may only have one or two people out there, and the whole place is lit up. So now they have the activation of the court you're using, not all of them. And I'm assuming basketball is the same way. Activated when you, okay. And the other thing about the batting cage lights are installed at the top of the cages. They're actually attached to the cages, so they're not way up high. And they're little boxes about the size of like two shoe boxes stuck together or a nice designer pair of boots. That's about how big the box is, right? Stuck on the roof of the cage, shining down three of them on the batting cages. So that's not going to illuminate anybody. You won't even be able to see it from adjacent residential. Basketball court lights, same thing, very low profile, downward facing, and they're 30 feet high. So unless you're in a direct vicinity, hard to sort of see it, but it may need a little bit of shielding around it. I don't know. Tennis ones are 50 feet, and they're not perfectly straight down. They're angled a little bit to broadcast out over an area. That's when glare can become a little bit more of an issue. Landscaping, the applicant went through this. I had mentioned I'm glad to see the ask for bicycle racks. I don't know if there's any bicycle racks at Keystone Park. Are there? I don't think there are. And
there are.
Are there?
Yeah, just like a couple.
Okay. Over by the concession stand, by the picnic tables, or that area?
By the paddle courts.
Okay. But I think they should put in some more. I'm surprised there aren't more there at the park now anyway. So I just, never a bad thing to ask for more bicycle racks. They are going to be adjusting the sidewalk network a little bit because the reconfiguration of the tennis courts will remove some of the sidewalk system they have now. So they are going to reconfigure the pedway system through there. It will still provide pedestrian connectivity between Central Avenue and Lake Street for continuity of circling for those who want to walk around or bike around. So I thought it was important to state that that's not going to be obliterated with this. They're going to reconfigure it so the connection is still made. And so that was an important thing to note as well. And as the applicant said, very little new landscaping going in here. He identified the trees, and I did my report, the ones going into the swale and the one tree going in south of what will likely be a new paddle tennis thing in the future. It's not a coincidence that space is perfectly the size. And then the one thing that I would state is that the notion of, and they've committed to this in their application, They indicated how many inches or calipers of trees they are going to remove, and they've agreed to abide by the village's tree replacement ordinance, which dictates the number of caliper of trees. 3 to 4 inch, 3 inch installation caliper trees is standard when you're replacing trees. It's what most commercial people do or anybody does. So the 3 inch caliper is fine. And again, they can only fit so many on the site, and like other applicants, they'll have to commit to doing it on the site until they can't, and they'll have to find other locations to put the trees. So that's not unusual. And the only signage being proposed is signage that you're not going to be able to see from the public rights of way anyway. It's not an advertising sign or Keystone Park sign. It's signage for the court users with the rules and regulations and policies of using the courts hung on the fences by the entry into the court. So that's the only signage thing. So that's it. Again, the reorientation of most of the uses is not an issue. There needs to probably be some discussion about batting cage locations because right now there is no programmed activity in those areas. Removal of trees, again, the biggest trees being lost are the ones on Central, where that's the side of the park that's been decimated historically by big mature trees. There used to be a ton 15 years ago, and they've just slowly been taken away as the park gets improved. And then the issue of lighting, and that's one, it may not be an issue, but the applicant needs to just respond to, is it an issue? Can it be addressed? Can it be shielded? Can't completely block out line of sight, but what can they do to mitigate it to the extent possible? But a lot of the other lighting improvements are a huge plus.
Three questions, please, John. One, section three on the zoning analysis. Just out of curiosity, why isn't the retention pod needing a type of setback? Because it's right up on,
it's,
you just does need one.
Not a structure. It's from ground to sky, there's nothing there. So the zoning ordinance setbacks talk about a use. Sometimes you can't put a parking lot in a required setback. You can't put a building or a structure in a required setback, which is why I dinged even sort of like the support structure for the nets.
Yeah.
But this is just a slight depression. So that does not require a setback. They can, there's nothing that says they can't put a depression or a detention swale. And the applicant said rightfully so, and I think there is one like this along the entire western edge of Priory Park. Kids there all the time, not an issue. There is one, and I'm glad they mentioned it because I was chomping at the bit to say it. There is one similar to this, maybe a foot less deep along the whole north side of Keystone Park West. People know it or not. At the end of that soccer field on the north along Lake Street, there's a 3-foot depression. It's been there for years. Same sort of a thing. So they exist in the village already. So
section four, you nicely write on, you know, the new uses and relocated uses. Shouldn't you have a section on loss of use, which would be the pond?
A loss of use?
Yeah, because right now I play on that area right now all the day at time. Kids play there. So there, in my opinion, your report should have stated a section about loss of use, which would be that retention pond. I don't know. I'm just asking if it should. Next thing is why everyone keeps saying now, both of you, Mr. and Mr. Slutton, also mentioned empty space is perfectly sized for a paddle court. It's perfectly sized for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Paddle court is not in this application. Yeah. So wanted to put that on the record as well.
It's not, yeah. Okay. And again, we take the application for what it is. If they had programmed it with another paddleboard or, you know, platform tennis, or I don't know what they call paddle tennis or platform tennis, but if that was in there, they wouldn't be able to proclaim that they are actually reducing permeable surface to the extent that they are, because they wouldn't, because part of that is this now new open space. That's not going to be open space for long. Oh, but right now it is, so it makes their permeable calculations look better. At some point it won't be, then they'll probably get back up to where they are. So. Correct, exactly right, 100%. Yep. Okay. It's a different discussion. It's not part of the application. Yep.
Reviewed the photo.
I have. I looked at the photometric plan, and I even requested a better copy because my first one, it wasn't high resolution when I zoomed into the PDF. I couldn't read the numbers, but I got one that I could. It does meet or exceed the light restrictions that the village has. Basically, the village wants 0 foot candles or half a foot candle at the property line. And this, with these cutoff and controls, the photometrics for this are rock solid. Yeah, they're good.
At prior applications. across from south of the park. Those lights, so the poles will be higher than the current one. Problem to the south of.
Yeah, it's hard to say 100%. My hunch is that will be less of an issue than it is, with the exception of what may be exacerbated by the removal of certain trees. I don't know, depending on where someone is looking at it, and are they looking right now through a tree canopy or not. I spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks in the neighborhood walking around at night, like literally seeing, and there are some perspectives where if the trees are removed, you have direct line of sight to some lights. There are fewer of them. There are significantly fewer, a third as many sources or standards. The LED offers more control than the ones we have now, the older models we have now. So could be reduced, could be the same. I doubt if it's going to be more of an impact.
There are fewer poles, there are fewer fixtures.
Correct.
Are the fixtures that were
on the ground?
Then.
Yeah, that I didn't see. I don't know what the existing photometric is now for the lights now. The proposed lights meet the village standards easily for illumination. And the old standards now, they're more of these like big conical shaped metal things. So they really got to sort of, you know, like this. The new LED ones are pretty flat. So they're not like that. They're more like this. So even the nature of how they're hung in the designing of the standards are not going to have as much line of sight from further away. So my guess is, you don't know until they're installed, my guess is it'll be have less of an impact on the surrounding neighborhood. Again, except for if someone is looking through a tree canopy, or in the future they won't. I don't know if that's an issue or not. I reviewed the traffic study, and again, they're not really introducing any new uses. The basketball courts are being separated out so they can be activated at the same time tennis is, where in the past it was one or the other because the basketball was on the tennis courts. But over the total of the Keystone Park, I don't see a huge increase in activity to much that it'll be a big impact. Cobalt Hamilton's parking analysis said it would likely generate the need for two more parking spaces. But based on the village ordinance, they're not required to have additional spaces. That's probably the actual impact, but the technical in terms of needing relief isn't in here. And Keystone Park doesn't provide any on-site parking now anyway, zero. It's all provided on the public rights of way surrounding streets or at the public lot over by the metro station, Park West. So it's not like they have an existing parking lot on Keystone Park that they could stripe two more spots on. So by code, they don't need two more. Practicality, they may benefit from two more, but they don't have any now anyway. It's all on streets surrounding. I don't see parking or traffic as an issue at all.
Village staff had received the full detailed plans. I neglected to share those with the district. So just to clarify that for the record, the park district did submit those plans. The version wasn't shared.
Or good audience turn in the wishes to it.
Thank you all. A couple of weeks ago, I think I've wandered into the wrong meeting, but I will tell you it's been very interesting and I really appreciate it. I'm Bob Ray. I live up at 830 Keystone. I'm a resident and I'm a pickleball player. A couple of weeks ago, the park board had an open forum for people like me to come in and express themselves. And I did. And I appreciated their time and attention. And then a couple of days ago, I was walking my dog and I saw the sign out front that the Development Review Board was also having a meeting and pickleball's on the agenda, so I have a couple of thoughts to share. And this will be very similar. I apologize to Lynn and the others. This will be very similar to what I've already said to them. If you look at the complex that you've been presented with tonight, I think what you'll see in my book is real opportunity for the Village of River Forest. If you see what's happening in Keystone Park, the potential exists with this kind of what I would call an improvement. The potential exists that we can really and truly have a paddle and tennis point of destination in the village. We're adding pickleball, you know, I won't go into it, but as you know, it's probably the fastest growing sport in the country. It's everywhere. And the fact that River Forest is getting it, in my opinion, is a wonderful thing. And I can see real potential for platform tennis tournaments one weekend, tennis tournaments another weekend, pickleball tournaments another week. The potential for that to be a point of destination, I think, is very high. What I am hoping to convince whomever will listen, including Lynn and Mike and everybody else, is that we will maximize the opportunity to play pickleball. And what I mean by that in particular, there are currently 5 tennis courts, and there are 2 ways you can line a tent. Well, there are probably more, but 2 common ways that you can line tennis courts for pickleball. One would be as the current system is over at Washington Park. And if it's the intention of this board and the park board to line them exactly as it is over at Washington Park, then my comments are irrelevant. That's a beautiful system. Washington Park is a great place to play. You've got 5 courts there. The tennis nets are used both for pickleball and for tennis. And you never, to my knowledge, have conflicts between the tennis players and the pickleball players. Your comment earlier, Mr. Martin, about how do people handle the courts. My experience, you know, could a conflict come up? Maybe. But in most instances, the tennis players and the pickleball players, you hang your racket in the right place. People are pretty courteous to each other when they go into changing courts. So if that's the system that's done, I'm all for it and I'm all done. My concern is if the other system that is common is done, and that's where you use temporary nets on a tennis court that are rolled out into, and so we have a pickleball court, in essence, on one side of the tennis net. Now, the way I have seen it in the past is the courts are lined on both sides, so you can actually get 10 pickleball courts on 5 tennis courts because there's one court on each side of the net. That's the way I've seen it in the past. That's the way I think is common, and I think that that's a pretty good system. If that's the choice that's made, then my comments are no longer relevant either. What I'm concerned about, though, is what I've heard, and which may or may not be true, I don't know, they would know, is if you line the tennis courts where you're only playing pickleball on one side of the tennis court. Now, so what that does is it makes the tennis court marked differently on either side of the net for the tennis players. That's not something I've ever seen before. And if it's true, and if it ends up being lined in that way, if I were a tennis player, I'd be concerned about that. One side may very well end up seeing an advantage over the other side. I think that's a problem. The other side is that if you line both sides of the tennis court with pickleball now, instead of leaving one side blank, then you don't have to do it again later. You can, the construction cost, it's all in, saves the taxpayers money. My concern is if you only line 5 of the courts now, then you decide later on, gosh, we'd like to have a little more. We'd like to have a tournament. We'd like to have league play. We'd like to have whatever it happens to be. Now you are into an expense because you've got to go and reline the other side of the court. Now, what I've heard, John was talking about the lack of impact of traffic. What I was trying to pay attention to, I've heard that traffic is the reason that lining one side of the court has been or is being considered. If that's, you know, that's a legitimate concern. You've got parking spaces to think about. There's lots of stuff to think about. That it's not my purview to know that. But what I would say is, if you're trying to control the access to the pickleball, you can do it easily by the number of nets you put out there. It doesn't matter how many lines you have on the court. You can determine almost on a daily basis how many courts do you want to make available to pickleball by the number of nets you put out there, rather than the number of lines, whether or not you've lined both sides of the court. So you guys do the big questions here. The park board does the design and stuff like that. But I'm willing to speak to anybody who'll listen about this, because I think if we don't maximize the opportunity in a village like River Forest, where people are always talking about, we don't have enough space, we don't have enough space, we don't have enough space, here's an opportunity where we absolutely do have enough space. It's a real easy thing to do. You and the park board is still in control of how many courts get used. You are in control. The park board is in control of whatever the traffic problems can be solved in a different way. That's my whole point. Thank you for listening. And if anybody ever wanted to talk to me about this, as you can tell, I'm not opposed to talking about it. So just give me a ring any old time. Thank you.
Any questions, please?
Regarding John's comments on the tennis court light and the height, we're more than willing to, as he discussed what they did previously at Keystone, looking at shielding or whatever's necessary. Again, as Todd said, we're using Musco, which is the premier installer. Our contractor for it is Jekyll. Is it Jekyll? Jekyll, which is the premier installer in the Chicago area, too. So
Didn't you have another
online was Fred Copeland, who was he's the engineer who designed the tennis court themselves. But I think he was really here more for if there was questions regarding the court layout itself.
A question to ask, how do you intend to type the tennis courts?
So the plans right now show the tennis court, the pickleball will be using the tennis, similar how we do Washington. There'll be one pickleball centered on the one tennis court. So we'll be using the tennis net, perhaps pull it down, same application.
Sorry. All right, anything else?
No. But, yeah, I mean, obviously the amendment we'd like to
request for all the site development allowances.
Were the residents were on the ready?
Yeah, so we actually did two public hearings on this. The first one was in March. Yeah. And so we followed that the village provided the addresses and
that's 500 feet.
500 feet. So there was hundreds of letters that went out. When the board came back and had a discussion at the following board meeting about the basketball courts, that we were now going to add lights to that facility, we had a second public hearing in early April. And you'll see in your notes, the second meeting nobody even showed up for. The first one we had, and I think you were there, some attendance. We had one individual concerned on the lights. They lived on the south side of the Union Pacific tracks. They were and that was kind of related to their experience with the platform tennis courts light.
Marianne asked about the notices, just so I am 100% transparent. I technically live 500 feet from Keystone Park, but at the far, far end. I'm like 1,000 feet away from where the stuff's being done, but we received a notice. I didn't go to any meetings or anything. I just wanted the record, so I think it did not obscure my objectivity in doing my review, but my household did get noticed because I live less than 500 feet away from the far west end of Keystone Park.
And in response to this notice, I received one inquiry at Village Hall. I just sent them the information, and there was not a positive or negative comment.
No other testimony that's going to be given tonight that will close the public portion. Whether we're ready to make a recommendation as the state developmental, always have that recommendation board to consider. But let's assume that we will. If we get to the point that we'll make a recommendation, are there any concerns that the board has?
I hate seeing year two going down. I don't know that it can be prevented, but we've lost so many trees in River Eagle. The only configuration that we can deal with, I guess that's all we can deal with. I'm
more concerned with the placement of the tree. Ask questions you can answer. I think that's one condition that I suggest. Two, all supposed to go on. Villages agree. But RB and at the zoning request for very unique piece of property here. House, at least you got two streets and numbers, but I think it's very you're near.
I'm new. Yeah, as I expressed earlier, Mitch, but I don't think that we can do anything. I'm concerned about children, but if you don't seem to think that that's going to be a problem,
I think they have insurance.
Yeah, I mean, there's kids in that park all day long. Yeah.
You know, when they're going in.
The area where the new batting cages are going to go is a spillover for that baseball diamond.
Yeah.
There's always people over there
and
there, too.
Can I just make a comment, please? So for the benefit of the two newer members who haven't received this guidance from my office, I've shared this in the past with the DRB, the ZBA, and the Plan Commission as appropriate. The Illinois Supreme Court has made clear that when any municipality is exercising zoning authority in response to an application by another unit of government, the village's broad discretion in land use gets narrowed in some ways because of the balance of powers between different units of government. So when the village is reviewing this application, and it applies to both your review and at the village board level, the village can't use its zoning authority to frustrate or thwart, is the standard that the Illinois Supreme Court has set, the statutory duties of the park district, in this case, to do recreation. Similarly, when District 90 came through with their projects at Roosevelt and their elementary schools, we gave similar advice. So I just want the group to keep in mind that, you know, park district decides recreation, you look at it through the land use lens, which your village planner, John Housiel, went through in exhaustive detail, all the land use and, you know, kind of planning parameters around it. But I just wanted to remind you of that kind of narrowed scope of your zoning review, given that this is a governmental applicant.
I'll move that we approval of the applicant.
Can I just restate the conditions so that we're clear what we're voting on? Sure. One are that the lighting hours remain in place as previously approved. Two is that the park district meet and calibrate and adjust the shielding on the lights to reduce glare in response to complaints. And then the final third condition is that the trees shall be replaced within some period of time after approval. And I
don't think with it.
Member Fishman? Member Shoemaker?
Yes.
Marianaki?
Yes.
Chairman Martin?
Yes. All right. Recommendation of the RB to the village board. All in favor, say aye. All right.
Aye.
We're dismissed.
For the Thanks for saying that. I was going to have to say it, and then I didn't.
That yard is
Lines.
That's just all grass.
No, we've got.